Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hello and welcome to the Sky U podcast by the Daily Gopher. I'm Chris, Go AU Fur. With me this week is Andy, Gopher Guy 05.
Hello, hello.
And Blake, Iowa Gopher.
It's a pleasure as always.
All right, so full agenda this week. We're starting off with our final kind of recap from the previous week's game. I think we had a great opportunity to talk about all the exciting things from Fresno State. We could talk on and on forever about Antoine Winfield Jr. and his amazing interception. But I'm just going to take it in an entirely different direction. I'm looking for you guys to give me complete hot takes, something fiery to take away from the Fresno game. So I'm going to turn to you first, Blake.
A fiery, bold take from the Fresno State game. If I had to commit to one, I would say I think the Gophers' passing offense is going to be better than their rushing offense this year.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, if I have to commit to a bold take, I think that's it. Because I think I've honestly been more impressed with the passing offense than I have with the rushing offense. I think part of that is the offensive line didn't look very good the first game. Rodney Smith didn't have a great second game. He just looked like the kind of guy who needs open running lanes, and the offensive line, while they're improving, just aren't giving that right now. And I think Mo Ibrahim definitely looked like the better of the two backs, because he's just able to get past that initial contact and just kind of barrel through guys. So I think it'll eventually improve, but I think overall we'll look back and think that the passing offense is the strength of the offense, because, I mean, they've got so much talent at wide receiver. Like, I don't know that when they've last had a combo like Rashad Bateman or Tyler Johnson, even Chris Hoffman Bell had probably the catch of the game last week. So this is a talented unit. I don't think we've actually seen like the actual depth of what they have at that position. Just we've only seen contributions from the top three. So I think there's a lot of potential for this passing offense. We barely even tapped into it.
All right. Andy, spicy take from the Fresno game?
My spicy take is that, we were all really excited, and all the talk about the offense all year long was having Rodney Smith back and having Tyler Johnson back. And my spicy take is that the PJ Flex recruiting classes have taken over and they're showing, and that it's going to be the sophomores by the end of the year that everybody will continually be talking about, not the seniors. Mo Ibrahim and Rashad Bateman will continue to outshine Rodney Smith and Tyler Johnson all season long, and Bateman will go on to be the leading receiver in all categories for this team, and Ibrahim will go on to be the leading rusher in all categories for this team. And we will come into the year thinking that it was going to be the Smith and Johnson senior-led offense, but it's really going to be the sophomores, Morgan, Ibrahim, and Bateman. They're going to make all the difference for this team going down the stretch.
I like both of those. All right. So clearly this week, if we're moving on from Fresno, we've got Georgia Southern. Not to be confused with Georgia State, which I don't know if that happens to other people, but I've been messing those two up. No offense to Georgia Southern. There's just too many schools in Georgia that are small that play Division I FBS level football. So I was for a while there, I was like, oh, we got the team that beat Tennessee. No, we do not have. If you're like me, that's not what happened. We're not playing the team that beat Tennessee in week one. We're playing Georgia Southern, the team that got blown out by LSU in week one.
Oh, so if we're not playing the Bulldogs, we're not playing the number two team in the country, or the number three team in the country?
I'm not that dumb. I mean, I'm pretty dumb, but not that dumb. I pay some attention to what's going on in the world. All right, so I want to give a quick shout out to Dirty Birds 233, new commenter, who's a Georgia Southern fan, who's kindly stopped by to give us information this week. Although I kind of get the feeling, Blake, I feel like he's been cribbing on your preview. Somehow I think he hacked our back end site here, and he's been reading the work you've been doing, it feels like.
Yeah, I just don't appreciate him coming in here and trying to steal my thunder. You know, we have a rigid schedule I got to keep. It's under embargo till Thursday. I just don't, I don't like that.
All right, so one thing that's kind of come up in the comments, and obviously, Blake, you'd kind of helped me be aware of it before this, is, we've got Georgia Southern. Everyone thinks option team. I think they tend to think very traditional triple option, the sort of thing the service academies run. So something that if you were watching Army Michigan this past weekend, you might be thinking that, or similar to what we saw Minnesota face against Georgia Tech in the bowl game last year. But that's not exactly what Georgia Southern is running, if I understand you correctly.
Correct. Georgia Southern runs probably more of a modernized version of the option offense. The version that people think of is the triple option offense that you see at Georgia Tech and the service academies. And the reason service academies rely on that system is because they have heightened weight standards for their offensive linemen. So they're typically undersized. And the way to neutralize that is to have a fast developing offense. So they always operate under center. And that's where that dive play is killer. Cause if you have plays that develop quickly enough, the defensive line doesn't have a chance to blow up your offensive line, and take advantage of that size. Where Georgia Southern is different is they operate almost exclusively out of shotgun and pistol formations. So obviously they're 4 or 5 yards behind the center. So it's really more of a zone read offense, and it takes away kind of that quicker developing aspect of the triple option offense. So if there is a big size disparity along the defensive and offensive lines, which if you're watching LSU, Georgia Southern, you saw, and LSU consistently blew up their offensive line, that's going to cause some problems. I mean, they do add in some wrinkles, different formations, misdirection to kind of keep defense on their toes. But I think as long as your linebackers play disciplined and defensive linemen don't get blown off the ball, that's the biggest difference in the game. And specifically Georgia Southern, they've got some personnel issues. I know they're replacing their top two leading rushers from last year. And then the heir apparent running back, Wesley Kennedy III, who also I think led them in receiving yards last year too. He was supposed to be the heir apparent running back. He was ruled academically ineligible prior to the season. So they've had to lean heavily on a pair of sophomores, Logan Wright and Matt LaRoche, who've had sort of some middling success so far. I know LSU shut them down pretty well. Also, their starting quarterback, Shea Wirtz, coming into the season, went down against LSU with a shoulder injury and actually did not play last week in their victory over Maine. The quarterback was redshirt freshman Justin Tomlin. And while they did rack up, I think, 395 rushing yards against Maine, they had to settle for 4 field goals, only scored 2 touchdowns, and the final score is 26-18. And it was actually a pretty relatively close game towards the end in the fourth quarter just because their offense stalled in the red zone. So, I mean, this is an offense, too, that mustered, 74 rushing yards and a field goal in the opener at LSU. So it's a far cry from the offense that they were running last year that was averaging, 266.2 yards per game, which is a top-10 rushing offense. So not exactly a high-powered attack at this point in the season that the Gophers will be facing on Saturday.
Does the shift in style in terms of the kind of option formation they're running out of, do they pass the ball more, or is this still a very much almost exclusively run kind of offense?
Yeah, they really don't pass very much at all. I think they had maybe 9 pass attempts last week, 11 pass attempts against LSU, so they're not going to throw more than a handful of times a game. They're going to run almost exclusively.
So basically they kind of face the same drawback of any option offense, where if you stay on schedule and you're moving the ball, you can chew clock, and you can, if you're scoring points, you can keep with somebody, or obviously if your defense is holding them, get ahead. But if you fall behind, you're facing the problem of not necessarily being able to catch up quickly unless you're breaking chunk plays.
Right, yeah. This, against LSU, that game was over by halftime just because LSU was just ripping off these chunk plays, and they'd pretty much smothered Georgia Southern offense. So if this is the type of team that if you build a big lead early and just keep your foot on the pedal, I mean, it's over.
All right, so against Fresno, the Gophers honestly had several good-looking drives, and had several promising looking drives where they would then shoot themselves in the foot offensively through some, you know, fumble or something else, penalty, etc. And, you know, would find themselves not scoring points. You know, it really felt like a game where if the Gophers had not continued to cause themselves difficulties, they could have scored more points in addition to also, obviously, some of the egregious mistakes that allowed Fresno to continue drives and score points. If Minnesota has a smoother offensive game, are they going to struggle to score points against Georgia Southern's defense, or is this a situation where if the Gophers execute like they've shown they are capable of, that they should be able to build a comfortable lead?
I think they should be able to have success. To me, it's an intriguing matchup because this will be an opportunity for Tyler Johnson, Rashad Bateman, Chris Hoffman Bell, and, you know, Tanner Morgan to face a defense that really hasn't had much success defending the pass. LSU's quarterback Joe Burrow that first week was actually 23 of 27. He had more touchdown passes than incompletions. I think he finished with like 278 yards and 5 touchdowns. And he and his backup quarterback completed at least one pass to 14 different receivers. But they had a kind of a new look offense. It was more of an up-tempo, no-huddle style, which obviously Minnesota is not going to do. But I do think Minnesota has the receiving core to spread them out and really sling it. So I think it's an opportunity for Tanner Morgan to kind of get in a rhythm in the passing game, which I can't say he's done up to this point. He had, you know, good numbers by the end of it last week, but it was a very peaks and valley game for him. And they do have two really good corners. Their senior starting quarterbacks, Monquavion Brinson and Kendall Wilder. But they are replacing two senior safeties from a season ago, including Josh Moon, who was their leading tackler. And I also think a lot of the problem for them, too, is a lack of a pass rush. They weren't able to get any sacks against LSU, and they only got 2 sacks last week against Maine. And they did lose their sack leader at defensive end Logan Hunt from last season, so it seems like they're having to replace a lot up front. The other intriguing aspect of this, too, is they've actually been pretty solid against the run. LSU only had 122 rushing yards. Maine only had 52. This defense is pretty good at getting in the backfield on running plays and kind of being disruptive. They have 10 tackles for loss so far this season, and just to give you a point of comparison, Minnesota's allowed 13 tackles for loss the first two games. So this is a game, too. I think if the Gophers are going to have success on the ground, it's going to be a lot of Muhammad Ibrahim, unless the offense open up, you know, more running lanes for Roddy Smith. But I think if they need a back who's going to turn out yards against a tough defensive front, it's going to be Ibrahim, whose running style kind of fits that that mold more. So I think there is an opportunity for a lot of success in offense here, and I think it's a good opportunity to see what Tanner Morgan can do when he's comfortable, when he's facing a secondary that's probably not as good as the two he's faced previously.
So at this point, I feel like, you know, predictions, we definitely need to kind of predict what we think is going to happen. Andy, I'm going to start with you. What if you had to give score kind of some general thoughts, what do you see for Saturday?
Yeah, you know, I think as Blake was saying, I think the Gophers should, in theory, have a bit more success offensively against this team than we've seen so far. And, you know, we've seen them shut down the run at most times this year. So the hope, I think, is that they'll actually be able to play tight defense against a team that they should, you know, pretty much outplay. But then again, we thought we'd see that week one as well. And it is a full moon Friday night, so, you know, anything could happen. That's all I'm just going to say. But I think...
Oh, God, it's Friday the 13th.
It's a full moon and Friday the 13th. So,
oh, no. You know,
so just be good. I guess we're playing on Saturday and not Friday. Thanks, Delaney. Yeah. Anyways,
let's ignore that I just did that.
Yeah. But I think Minnesota should be able to handle Georgia Southern relatively easily. You know, I think the passing game, as Blake said, should hopefully continue to click. Hopefully we can get some running and grind out some clock in the second half. I've got a 34-10 Gopher win on Saturday, and it should be a gorgeous day at TCF Bank Stadium. So hopefully it should be a packed house to watch Minnesota go 3-0 in the non-conference.
Blake, what's your prediction?
You know, I'm not real high on Georgia Southern. I honestly think this will, I hate to say their weakest, but I think it's of the three, this is their weakest non-conference opponent. I still think that they're a good team. I don't think they're as good as they were last year. I think they've had some struggles this year. I do think this is a game that Minnesota should win. And just for context too, Georgia Southern, I think, has only beaten one Power 5 program in the last decade, and that was a Will Muschamp coach Florida team in 2013 that finished the season with like 7 straight losses, including a loss to Georgia Southern. So I don't see Minnesota in the midst of that kind of season. So I do think in the end, Minnesota comes out on top, score somewhere around 31-13, but I'm sure it'll be closer than any of us are comfortable with.
I'm ready for the Gophers to clean up the stupid. I'm tired of hearing an announcer say least penalized team and then watching us get a stupid penalty. So I think this is the week they clean that up, and they cruise to a fairly comfortable 38-17 win. So that's what I've got. But before we can all enjoy what will hopefully be a good win on Saturday, many of you are going to have to get to the game, and it sounds like that actually might be more problematic than you might think. So I'm going to turn back to our eye in the sky, Gopher Guy 05, to explain some potential traffic woes that you should all be aware of. A little PSA here.
Yeah, I'm sure you'll see it be pushed out by the U here as we get closer to game day as well. But it's going to be a bit of a cluster trying to get into TCF Bank Stadium on Saturday. MnDOT is doing their best to try and get everything buttoned up before the winter season. Last week, if many of you who live in the Twin Cities may remember, I-94 was closed between 280 and downtown St. Paul. Well, that project's done, but now we're moving back to the 35W cluster. So northbound 35W is going to be closed between Highway 62 and 94 starting at 10 p.m. Friday night through noon on Saturday. So if you're a late arrival to the game, you might be able to get there via 35W. But it's going to be closed, 35W is going to be closed in both directions between 94 and 280 all weekend long. They stressed that the ramp from 35W going north on 35 from University 4th Street will be open, but it sounds like going south it will be closed. So your best bet is to try and come in from the east or the west on 94 or take some side streets in, because it sounds like 35W is going to be a bit of a cluster on Saturday afternoon.
Excellent. Thank you, Eye in the Sky, Gopher Guy 05. Another exciting thing that I think had sort of slipped my mind until Blake and Andy reminded me earlier today, but it's actually Thursday is the 10th anniversary of the first game at TCF Bank Stadium. September 12th, 2009 was when the Gophers kicked off their very first game against Air Force in TCF Bank Stadium. And in that spirit, I'm kind of interested in hearing kind of a favorite TCF memory from each of you guys. Could be anything, could be from that first game, could just be a favorite moment. Doesn't even have to be from during a game, could be just something else. But Andy, I'll start with you. What's your favorite TCF Bank Stadium memory?
Oh man, there's several of them. You've got several memorable Iowa games. 2010 and 2011 and 2014
being... Oh, 2014. Magical 2014.
That was a fun one. Relaying to you the 2010 finish on the phone as you were in a outlet mall in rural Ohio.
That was magic.
That one was fun. Of course, the Air Force game was a classic, but I think the most fun and the most memorable time I've had in TCF Bank Stadium is got to be Halloween night 2009. I've never heard a crowd boo that loudly, that long, in unison at the officials as they just absolutely were making some terrible calls against the Gophers in favor of Michigan State that Halloween night. But Minnesota pulled off the win over Kirk Cousins and the Spartans on the Dewan Bennett immaculate reception. Bouncing off of, I think it was Nate Tau Arnett, and Bennett picked off the hop and went in to score the game-winning touchdown. Gophers knock off the Spartans Halloween night. It was a heck of a party at TCF that night.
Yeah, I don't think I'll ever forgive myself for missing that one, if I'm honest. That was, I mean, it was a fun game to watch, but it would have been magic to be in the stadium for that one. Blake, how about you? What's your favorite TCF Bank Stadium memory?
You know, I've only been to a handful of games at the bank, and I specifically avoid Iowa games just because if I'm in attendance, Minnesota will lose. The only Iowa-Minnesota games I've been to, Minnesota's lost, and I can't stand the Hawkeyes, so I take one for the team. I don't go in hopes that that'll tip things in the balance of the Gophers, but you know, hasn't worked out in recent history. Fingers crossed for this year. But honestly, this is going to be a strange one. My funniest memory from TCF Bank Stadium was I went to the Rutgers game with my dad. I think it was 2016. It was Clay's first season, and they were up. I think they got up pretty big in the first half, like 21-3 or something. And then Rutgers just started to creep back. Minnesota kept making mistakes. And honestly, like, just in the stands, I just started, like, laughing to myself. And my dad's like, what's so funny? I was like, oh, they're going to blow this. They're going to blow this. And just, like, with every, like, Rutgers touchdown, it's one of those things, if you don't laugh, you're going to cry. And I was just like, this is just kind of hilarious to me. Like, I get to see my first Gopher collapse up front, up and close and in person. And eventually they did pull it out, but I just kept telling, like, I think by the third or fourth quarter, I just kept telling my dad, you know, we could be witnessing history here. This could be one of the worst losses in program history, because Rutgers was bad that year. But I don't know. I just got some sick amusement out of that, and just it was just fun enjoying that game in my own perverse way.
You may have summarized the Minnesota sports experience. Joy and humor from horribleness. I can't think of anything more on brand for a Minnesota sports fan.
Honestly, that's just the way we're programmed now. It's the way we're conditioned. That's how we have to survive.
We need to get you up for something better than that. We can't let that remain your best TCF Bank Stadium memory.
Well, I've seen some good games. I saw, you know, the Oregon State opener for Clay's. I've also seen a fair share of bad games, but I need to get back up there. Hopefully, when PJ's got this turned around and we're pretty competitive, I can make it up there for a couple games.
Gotta stop living in the land of no scooters, man. Get yourself a scooter and get up here. Get up there, because it's not like I'm living there either. But
I gotta get that scooter, man. I don't know what the time would be. A time travel time. I know you gotta charge those scooters too. Those batteries don't last that long. So.
I mean, they move pretty good. I think you get about 20 miles an hour out of it. So,
if you see me going, you know, I-80, I'll be on the side of the road with that scooter. I'll probably have like a remote battery pack with me charging it.
I could choose a couple different football memories, but I actually think two of my favorite memories are actually just Andy and I got the opportunity to take a tour before the stadium was completed. That I think was honestly one of my favorite things, because at that point you'd been waiting so long for it to happen and it wasn't there yet, but imagining what that stadium could be and then ultimately having the stadium very much live up, I think, to what my hopes and dreams for it were. That was a really cool experience. To kind of take a behind-the-scenes hard hat look at how things were coming together. And it actually took a number of years. It took until, Andy, what, 2 years ago? Until I got a chance to tour with you after it was actually a full stadium?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah, so it took, I mean, honestly, it took almost 9 years between when it was being constructed to when I was able to see it finished. Like, obviously, I've been in the stadium many times since it was finished, but the behind the scenes spaces, I had not been in the locker room, for example, since the locker room was completed. I'd only seen the very rough beginnings of the locker room. That was a real cool kind of bookend for me to inside that first decade, to see it before it was there and then get to see it completed. And I, as a Gopher fan, if you're a season ticket holder and you have not taken advantage of the TCF Bank Stadium tour as part of your Gopher points, because that's one of the easy Gopher points things to do, I would recommend it personally. It's just, I don't know, I think it's really fun to get to see the little details in and around the stadium from a different perspective. So if you haven't done that, I would certainly recommend it. I don't know. Any other final happy memories from the first decade of TCF?
Well, I mean, we can think of plenty of heartbreaking memories from the first decade of TCF to fit along with our, you know, Minnesota identity.
Let's not, though. Let's not do that. Let's move on. If that's the direction we're going to go, let's move on.
I mean, I think there's been a lot of, like, exciting games. I think what we're all looking forward to is, like, a lot of more meaningful games. You know, if PJ gets this in the direction he wants to go, like, you know, the Halloween Michigan State game was great. Iowa, you know, 51-14 was great. I think it's just going to be cool if we get to the point where, like, you know, we're playing for something meaningful where, you know, we're competing with the top teams in the Big Ten. I think that's something that's exciting if we see, you know, Flex plan come to fruition, is just, you know, more meaningful games as opposed to just the occasional, you know, fun competitive game. I know that's something that I'm just personally looking forward to.
Yeah, I am looking forward to my first Axe game in TCF where Minnesota wins the Axe. That would be a big deal to me, for sure.
Yeah, no, there are several memorable ones. The initial chair game against Nebraska, that one was great.
Okay, that was memorable for you. Some of us have problems recalling that game.
Yeah, the A.J. Barker goes off game against Purdue, that was a... That was a fun one. You know, yeah, I think there's definitely been some... I mean, TCU was a memorable one in Ohio State that year. What was that? Was that 2015 Ohio State?
No, that was 2014. It was 2014. Because I just moved to Cincinnati.
Wait, that was the Dilly Bardan game, wasn't it?
Yes, yeah, so that was the Dilly. That, you know, so those, even though they were close losses, both are memorable for multiple reasons. So, yeah, you know, we can only hope that we jack up the winning percentage a little bit for the second decade and see if we can pull off some more nice big wins here.
I agree. All right, so we're going to get a little bit of a volleyball update from Andy. Also, our special rando mystery question of the week coming up right after the words from these sponsors.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right. Volleyball had been kind of having an up and down run recently, but they recently closed out strong against Florida. Andy, you just want to give us a quick recap of what's been going on with volleyball?
Yeah, the Gophers opened up the PAV, their home season, Saturday night against number 7 Florida. The Gophers ranked number 8th in the country, and they got things turned around. They ended up coming through with a big 3-0 sweep of the Gators. You know, they finally got their passing figured out and stopped making unforced errors. Stephanie Samdy had a double-double, 16 kills, 12 digs. Kylie Miller registered 36 assists and an ace and was named the Big Ten Setter of the Week. The transfer from UCLA trying to step into Seeliger Swenson's footsteps and doing the best she can. But the Gophers have the toughest non-conference schedule in the country for a reason, and it doesn't get any easier. They head out west this weekend to the Big Ten Pac-12 Challenge, where they'll play number 10 Oregon in a bit of a revenge game. If you remember, the Ducks knocked off the Gophers twice last year, including knocking them out of the NCAA tournament on their home court in the Sweet 16. They play number 10 Oregon Friday and then get a date at number 1 Stanford, the defending national champions. The Gophers and the Cardinal will face off Saturday evening. So two more really, really tough games for the Gophers before they come home for a couple easy non-conference games before the Big Ten starts. So I think it'd be good if Minnesota could at least try and get a split this weekend. But, you know, I think we'll get another better look and see if they've figured out some of their woes or whether they're, you know, it's one of those seasons that's going to be good but not great.
All right, random question time. I've been just thinking about this today. I found myself sort of sucked into puppy Twitter. Cute videos of cute puppies on Twitter. It happens to the best of us. that's where I ended up for a brief period today. And it got me thinking, Major League Baseball parks across the country have Bark in the Park nights where fans can come with their dogs, usually for a certain section of the stadium, kind of reserved for the puppy friends. And my question to y'all is, should dogs be allowed in TCF Bank Stadium? I mean, probably not generally. There are obviously logistical concerns to doing that every week. But should we at least get ourselves a bark in the, well, I guess it's not a park, but something that rhymes in a puppy way for TCF Bank Stadium? And Blake, I believe you have some fairly strong feelings on this.
I hesitate to say strong. And, you know, let me be clear. I have a dog. I love my dog. I love dogs in general. But I do have a lot of empathy for stadium staff and like event staff. And I know a lot of people that, well, I have a lot of friends that work in those positions, and just the logistical nightmare of a stadium full of dogs, you know, just gives me anxiety, not even being in those positions. Just, you know, cleanup, security, you know, like what if a dog gets in a fight with another dog, or a dog, you know, bites someone at the stadium. Cause you know, it's kind of like, to me, it's not like driving. Like you may be the best driver, but is, you know, someone else, you know, on that, who, you don't know who else on the road and what quality of drivers they are. You know, same thing applies to dog owners. You know, they're responsible dog owners or not so responsible dog owners. So, not every dog's gonna be on their best behavior. I just think, in this case, there is such a thing as too much of a good thing. And as much as I love the sight of, you know, dogs, you know, playing with each other and just being friendly, I just, the stadium full of them, I don't think is probably the best idea.
Counterpoint, I get to pet them.
That's a fair point.
Like, most of my counterpoints involve something like, but they're cuddly, or they're good, they're all good dogs, Blake.
Yeah, I've met some not so good dogs, I will say that.
Those dogs don't come to bark in the park. I'm not sure. I'm just saying that out loud because I want it to be true.
Here's my argument for no. We've all seen multiple dogs chase squirrels. I'm sure they do the exact same thing to a gopher. So,
damn.
You know, just in safety, I think we keep the dogs away. Unless it's the bulldogs, in which case, then, you know, whatever. But otherwise, I think we keep the dogs away from the gopher population.
Wow, Andy,
counterpoint.
Andy with the killer argument.
No, see, I think counterpoint, Goldie is a fantastic joke mascot for joking around. Nobody goofs off better than Goldie. I believe Goldie could turn any potential puppy attack into something worthy of the best YouTube video ever.
I don't know about
that. I'm not going to say, there's no way you're going to convince me I'm wrong, is basically where I'm going with this.
And that's fine. Yeah, you can be obstinate. That's your prerogative.
Ooh, okay. I do like the use of obstinate. If this was around the horn, you would have gotten like 5 little points from me for the use of obstinate alone.
Yeah, I know words. So. I know words, man.
I believe if Ustreet was here, he would back me, which puts us in the 2-2 tie. Since I am taller than everyone, the dogs win. Please go for sports. The Gopher Athletic Department, work on. You've come up with all sorts of other creative ways, and I applaud you for increasing attendance. Pick some worthless home game in the future against some nobody we don't care about.
Illinois.
And make it. And make it. And
Sorry, I meant Liddyville.
All right, you heard it here first. Don't believe us though, because it's fake. Bark in the park against Illinois. That's what we want. Make it happen, Gopher Sports. And on that very lit note, go Gophers. Sky Yuma, row the boat.